the OTB Podcast Network.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now, plenty going on in the world of rugby. Heineken Champions Cup semi-finals this weekend. Leinster and the three French teams are left. We have Ireland third in the Women's Six Nations. We have George North ruled out of the Lions Tour. And the 2022 Men's Six Nations schedule announced as well. Plenty more besides. Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent, how you doing?
Good, Joe, thanks, you.
Andy Dunn, always good to have you with us.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Rory.
Hey, Andy.
So, Rory, update us on the injury situation at Leinster. The headline news being Johnny Sexton is out. Who's out? Who's in? Where are we?
It's largely positive, I think, with Johnny Sexton being the obvious large caveat, because he is being stood down with his head injuries and there's no sign of him making a comeback this week. So Ross Byrne will start on Sunday. But James Ryan and Gary Ringrose, Scott Penny, came back last weekend against Munster and came through unscathed, so they'll all be available. And you'd imagine Ryan and Ringrose will come into the team. Caelan Doris is tweaked the calf just before the game on Saturday, so didn't play. But he's not being ruled out at this stage. Jemison Gibson-Park may come back as well. Kieran Frawley, I think, was pulled at the 11th hour. He may be on the bench behind Ross Byrne. So largely they're stronger than they were for the quarterfinal, but they're missing Johnny Sexton.
There's some word that Sexton may have passed his return to play protocols, but Leinster are showing an abundance of caution. Is that correct, or just a rumour, or nothing to that?
I haven't heard that. Leinster say he's following the graduated return to play protocols, okay. And you would imagine that they, if he was on track to play, they would play him. But no, they've basically taken a massive amount of caution around it because it is 3 and 9 weeks. You know, he had that bad one against Wales in Cardiff, missed the France game, picked up another one in the Munster game, the Pro 14 final, and then this one against Exeter. So they've decided to give him time and space and a bit of specialist help. And I suppose the hope of getting things right and making sure his long-term health is being looked after more than anything.
Yes. I mean, we can't stray into the department that his former neurologist did and be professing on his health on the radio. But 3 and 9 weeks is where we are in terms of head collisions for Sexton.
Yes, and that's on top of the ones that we know about in the past, when he was stood down in 2015 at the end of his Racing 92 career, the one in 2016 that meant he was a doubt for the 2016 Six Nations. He picked up one in 2018 during the group stages of the Heineken Champions Cup against Exeter, and there was one he's talked about in the past. So he's had a good number of head injuries over the course of a long and story career, and I guess it's him, his medics, his family and his club are aware of all the facts and all the information, and they'll make the decisions about what he wants to do for his future. But there is no indication that he wants to stop. He was training yesterday. He wants to go on a Lions tour, and that's his prerogative. I guess it's his body at the end of the day.
So over to you, Ross Byrne, Andy, who performed really well when he was thrown on after 25 minutes against Exeter, and you would have to say has proven himself at this level.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought, arguably, it was one of Ross Byrne's best performances for Leinster, given the circumstances, the knockout stages of a European competition with a huge amount at stake, and the captain and you know key team member in Johnny Sexton going off the field at that stage, 25 minutes in, he really hit the ground running. He was so measured. He was so composed, and I think they are traits he brings quite regularly to Leinster performances. He's obviously very comfortable in that environment in terms of how they want to operate on the field. There's a familiarity with a greater degree of familiarity with his team members because he's with them every day. Than perhaps when he's been with the Irish squad. I mean, he's also been thrown in the deep end in a couple of Irish teams that were maybe, for example, way back when, it seems now, in preparation for the World Cup, and we got a hiding down in over in Twickenham. He was much maligned for that, and I think as is the way it goes with halfbacks, nines and tens. You often get blamed when you get blamed unnecessarily when things don't go well. Sometimes you get undue credit when things go well. And in his case, I think some of his Irish performances haven't been great, but they've been, that has to be, I suppose, modified a bit in terms of he's played behind well-beaten packs on a number of occasions for Ireland. So, you know, he's definitely got what it takes to be a real key contributor at the business end of a Heineken Cup season, for sure. It probably hasn't transpired into international performances yet, but he hasn't played a whole lot for Ireland behind a dominant pack, for example.
No, and I think that's a very key point. From the weekend, Rory, Leinster 3, Munster 27, Harry Byrne off injured early on, same as Northampton pre-Christmas, these games where you really want to see Harry Byrne and it hasn't quite happened for him due to injury. So they were playing with their four choice half-backs. They were killed at the breakdown, really. The line-out wasn't great. I don't know when they last scored only 3 points at the RDS. This was a very different team and performance to the Pro 14 final. It probably only served to diminish the Rainbow Cup minus the South African sides further, unfortunately, of no relevance really to Sunday's game.
No. 2008 was the last time Leinster were nailed at home by Munster, famously at the time when Munster were at the absolute height of their powers and Leinster were on the cusp of something they didn't realise at the time. So, yeah, like Munster went full out. Munster's first team against a mix of Leinster's second, third and fourth and even fifth in David Hawkshaw's case, choice players. And really their inexperience at halfback was exposed, but also their pack was fairly exposed. And maybe it just shows that there is not a bottomless pit of players at Leinster that we thought was there. You know, you put them in against the Heineken Cup team like Munster and there's still a bit of a jump. You know, this wasn't the Ospreys when Wales players are all being played. So the Rainbow Cup is what it is. Like, Ulster-Connacht was a great game on Friday night. Munster played very well on Saturday and Leinster have bigger fish to fry. They're starting a competition at the same time as they're in the business end of another and have already claimed the trophy, and even it has different rules to the other competitions they played in. So it's quite difficult for them. And I think they took a fairly sensible decision to take most of their front liners who had fairly heavy Six Nations involvement out of the equation. I think that will stand to them on Sunday, especially when La Rochelle's game against Brive was cancelled last weekend because of COVID outbreak in Brive. So all of Ronan O'Gara and John O'Gibbs' charges have had a nice rest. So it was pretty good that Leinster players had a nice rest as well.
Andy, I thought we got a really interesting sense from Robin McBride about how Leinster see this game and see the winning of this game against La Rochelle. He was talking about how against Exeter, a bit like Leinster, they like continuous action. They like the ball and play a lot. He was maybe saying of La Rochelle, they are more of a power-based team at times, explosive, brilliant bursts at times. So he was saying with La Rochelle that their ball and play time could be in the high 20s, whereas we, as in Leinster, would be far more comfortable if we could push that ball and play time up to 40 minutes just to get them blowing a little bit, to challenge them fitness-wise. How will Leinster go about that then? Will they just keep the ball and go through the phases and continuous motion minute after minute after minute and try and tire La Rochelle out? Is that what we can anticipate now in part on Sunday based on McBride's comments?
Yeah, I wouldn't anticipate exactly that, Joe. It's in modern rugby, it can be kind of a risky policy in that you know to hold on to possession for long periods is draining. It's physically draining. It's one of the key factors in holding on to possession. I suppose you look at modern day, you know, Champions League football, teams who hold on to possession preserve energy, and the opposition defences who play a high press are working so hard. It tends to be the opposite in rugby. If you want to hold on to possession, it's quite physically draining to ask your forwards to maybe just keep hitting up targets, making small gains and just holding on to the ball in order to try and eventually you're playing the long game. You're looking at keeping the ball for longer periods, getting up to that 38, 39, 40, 41 minutes, keeping the ball in play in that match. That's not what suits the La Rochelle side. They, as you said, they like short, explosive bursts, where, yes, they make a line break and they convert, and then they're okay without the ball in play for periods, and they get a breather. If you look, at the likes, some of the profile of their players, Will Skelton stands out, 6'8" and 22 stone. So he does not want the ball in play for 41 minutes. I can tell you that. But he can do some serious damage. And in fact, he has done serious damage. He played a fairly magnificent first hour in the Heineken Cup final for Saracens a couple of years back. We covered it over in St. James's Park in Newcastle. And he was energetic. I mean, he's impossible to stop with one man. He's impossible to win a collision with. So you're down to the likes of maybe two of the back row soaking up a tackle. He gets his arms free and they can get back into that explosive approach that they want. So the size, the physique of their pack in particular, then they've got the likes of Greg Aldridge, Kevin Gourdon and Victor Vito, who are so dynamic and so skillful. They're very similar to the likes of Jack Conan in their style of play. So they've got a bit of both going on, a big, bruising, very, very physical front five and a lot of skill and athleticism in the back row. And that all leans towards the type of game they like, that explosive offload, very efficient, make a line break, make a score, and then take a breather. And that's certainly how it worked in their quarters against Sale. Leinster, it's just a tricky one. I think, you know, I don't think Leinster should avoid the idea of taking risks either and just trying to close down the game by tiring out La Rochelle. I think Leinster have more capability than that, but I do understand Robin McBride's approach, and I think it will lean in Leinster's favour to elongate their time in possession, however tiring that may be.
Rory, I'll take Andy's Will Skelton at 22 stone and Razem Antonio at 24 stone. So they have some monsters up front. How do you see that battle up front?
Yeah, I mean, if you combine the two of them in the scrum, what's that, almost 50 stone. So you've... that's Keane Healy's job on Saturday or on Sunday, is to contain that, and Sale weren't able to do that when they were combined. The power of that right-hand sided La Rochelle scrum was able to splinter Sale and caused all sorts of problems, which gave them penalties, which meant they could kick to the corner, which meant they could attack, and they can beat you nearly any way. La Rochelle, they have that pack that Andy talked about, but also nice halfbacks who could, you know, an All Black World Cup winner who can move the ball in Kerr Barlow, Ohio West, who's an attacking player, you know, a good attacking player, out half, maybe not the most controlling, but they've Plisson to come off the bench. They've Levani Botia, who's arguably the most exciting inside centre in the game, and then a couple of Springbok wingers and fullbacks out the back. So the tight five area that you've asked about is really, really important, and Leinster don't just need to get parity there, they need to get on top. And, you know, that game was the one where Leo Cullen kind of puffed out his cheeks and went, "That's just genetics, isn't it?" When he was talking about the Saracens' advantages over Leinster, that was at the height of when the English teams had Irish teams in a real power stranglehold. That does seem to have swung back the Irish way a little bit. And, you know, the fact that Ronan Kelleher is there, who's a brilliant athlete, and Ryan Baird might come off the bench and he's in phenomenal form and is just a powerful man himself. He's not got the size, but he has the carrying power. You know, Furlong and Porter both can live in that company. Keane Healy can do it as well. So they have the horses for the course. And if they perform, I think they're justified favourites. But it's not going to be an easy one for them. And it starts with containing that power that La Rochelle have. Because if they get in the ascendancy, they have all of the weapons from number six out to cause you to make your life hell, basically. And obviously, there's no crowd there, but it's still... it should be a fast track. It should be. It should suit the way they want to play. So, or both teams want to play. But if La Rochelle can get front football, they have all the weapons to hurt Leinster.
Yeah. Ronan was effusive about Botia after the Gloucester game. Said there's no centre like him in world rugby. We saw Brice Doolin for France in the Six Nations. What a good player he is. You mentioned the wings, Rory Rule and Lades. Rule really caught the eye against Sale. He was very, very good. West attend, not a great goalkeeper. Goal kicker, excuse me, that could come back to haunt them. He's not super reliable off the kicking tee. One other thing, Andy, to mention with La Rochelle, and I guess by extension O'Gara, they have some brilliant starter place. And they hit Gloucester and Sale with the same one. There was a slight variation, but the same one, and caused trouble there. So I guess the point is they can hurt Leinster in lots of different ways here. This is going to be a really interesting game.
Yeah, I think Ronan has taken huge education and experience from his time in the Crusaders as well. I remember at that stage, when Ronan went down to the Crusaders, Jerry Flannery and Felix Jones, who were both assistants at the time in Munster, spent a period of time travelling down around in New Zealand. And all three of them seemed to say very similar things about their experience, in that it was almost embarrassingly simple compared to how the Northern Hemisphere overcomplicates things, and that, in fact, the onus down in New Zealand was on improvement of players' skills and empowerment of players to make decisions off the cuff based on the fact that they've got superior skill levels. And again, that becomes a virtuous circle. The more you practice your skills, the more likely you're going to be able to make good decisions on the hoof, the more likely risky plays will come off, and the more you preserve yourself in your game. And the Crusaders have won a lot of Super Rugby titles by playing this similar style to La Rochelle. They're not big on holding on to possession. They're big on soaking up teams in defence and then being explosive and then slicing you open in a couple of plays. And Rog has mirrored that. And you actually go and look at Jerry Flannery over in Harlequins, and they're playing a very, very similar style as well. It's economic. You don't use up a lot of energy on the ball. You use up a lot of energy in defence, then you turn it over and you're explosive and you're against broken field. But so when you think of that type of play that La Rochelle have, you then add in this giant like Will Skelton and the giant like Antonio, and what they can bring to the scrum. Their set piece is really solid. And then they've got starter plays that I think is a lot to do with Ronan's experience and imagination there, and his willingness to look at first phase play as a means to scoring, as opposed to first phase play being a means to setting up second phase play. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge difference in attitude there. When you have a coach who wants to use first phase play as a means to scoring, you tend to get a huge response from players. Players love that because it shows a signal of intent. It seems to show a lot of confidence in your players. And it's certainly something that appeals to a lot of players. If you have a coaching team that say, we're going to have a go off first phase, it's a kind of a populist decision, I think, as a coach. So, yeah, I mean, they're joint top in France in the domestic league and in a European semi-final, and none of it's by accident in my opinion. So you put all those things together, they're quite a fearsome mix.
Yeah, Rory O'Gara's stock right now is sky high. He can do no wrong, and obviously he's been made director of rugby for the next 3 years. Gibbs is moving on. I don't think he has any intention of coming home anytime soon, and I don't think he would be averse to taking the Ireland job long before he ever takes the Munster job, if he ever takes the Munster job. On the director of rugby role for the next 3 years, for Gibbs and O'Gara, we might read Leo Cullen and Lancaster, with O'Gara very much as Lancaster. And it was interesting, he was on with Adrian on Friday on OTBAM, and he was saying for him the priority is absolutely being out on the grass, coaching the team, working with the team, the very thing Lancaster loves to do. And now he's going to take on this extra responsibility, contracts, recruitment, strategic growth over the next 3 years. It's going to be very interesting to see how he manages that workload, because it's considerable, to say the least.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I would have no doubts that he's got the mental capacity to take it all in. I mean, he's lived this life as a coach abroad, but a media pundit here, and he often talks about his coaching philosophy when he's talking to you, when he's writing in the Examiner, when he's doing interviews. And like, we know we have a good idea of what his mantra is. We have a good idea. Anyone who's ever spoken to him or listened to him knows how fiercely intelligent he is and how much emotional intelligence he has. So I think there's no doubt that he'll be able to assimilate to that role. I think you're right on the kind of, I think he probably has a, I think the plan in his head has probably changed over the years. I remember interviewing him after a Racing game in 2014 or 2015 when he talked about the dream of coming home and coaching Munster alongside Paul O'Connell. I don't know if that's the dream anymore. I would be surprised if he goes his entire career without ever coaching Munster, but I think he's on track for Ireland first. And it's all about timing and it's all about his family, and he'll put that first and all of that sort of thing as well. And this is really interesting to see him go up against the Leinster machine. We don't get to see enough top 14 in this country. We don't get to see him at all from, you know, most weeks of the year. We really only get to see him in Champions Cup. So this year has been a really good endorsement of his coaching, because La Rochelle looked like a really well-coached team, a team who were enjoying themselves, who were on top of their game. And even in his post-match interviews, he looks like a man who's really enjoying things and really on top of his game himself. So it's been you're right, his stock is really high at the moment. Obviously, with every coaching job, there'll be highs and lows, and it's not all linear, and it's not all straight lines. And Sunday could end up being a difficult day, because he has repeatedly told us that his team are not ready for this. So I know that's coach speak, and he has to play his team down a little bit, but they are stepping up in class. Leinster are far better than Gloucester or Sale Sharks. And while he has test players in every position, his team have never played in a semi-final at this level before. They played in the Challenge Cup final a couple of years ago before he arrived, but this is another level. We saw what Leinster did to the champions a couple of weeks ago. So there's a reason he's been stressing that point, I think. But yeah, his coaching career is just fascinating. He's one of the most interesting people in Irish sport, if not the most interesting. And that's why he's on the air so often, and his thoughts are so compelling.
How do you see the trajectory of his career over the next couple of years, Andy? Obviously, he's at La Rochelle for the next three, for starters.
Well, I saw an interview with Alan Shearer about being inducted into the Premier League Hall of Fame, and he spoke about when he had an opportunity to go to Manchester United, and he'd actually purchased a house in Manchester or was just about to, and he had a last minute change of heart. I think he said, "I just want to go home." And he said he never regretted that decision when he decided to join Newcastle. And he had 7-8 years in Newcastle where he felt he was at a kind of a peak level of his playing career. And although he didn't win titles, he felt comfortable and at home. And it was interesting to hear someone like Shearer speak that way, with that kind of emotion for his own hometown. And you don't often hear it in modern day sport. I wonder, in the case of O'Gara, by comparison, I mean, will a time come where he just wants to go home? He just wants to spend a bit of time. He's a young family and he wants to settle back in Ireland. You know, we can only speculate on that, but, you know, having spent a lot of time now, in 3 years' time, he'll have spent, I think, the best part of 10 years out of Ireland. And it's a long time with a young family. So he may well be hopeful that time comes in 3 years and he's ready and Munster are waiting. Timing has a lot to do with it. You never know what can happen. As Rory correctly identified, I think there was a time where he was really longing for maybe a role back in Ireland, maybe with Paul O'Connell and some kind of dream combination. But that's not how life works, not how sport works. Things change. And I think he's very comfortable in his current setting. I think he has this growth mindset I've heard him talk about, where he's very honest in that. He's very keen to learn. It's a tricky job, though, to come back to Munster, having been the legendary player that he was. And I do think a lot of the ex-players, for example, and particularly the peers of Anthony Foley, look at that situation and the job pressure. And it's inevitable. It's a very small environment, very small and very powerful environment. And if it goes wrong, it can be challenging. And I think that potentially made a lot of players rethink their coaching careers and how they how they look at their involvement with their own home club, not just in Munster, obviously, but I wonder, do those things play in his mind a little bit? I do see him having a career back in Ireland, but I could also see him leaving Ireland again afterwards. You know, who's to say he wouldn't go back and do another job somewhere else if he's enjoying it too? So maybe it's a bit more of a transient dream, if it's still a dream.
Rory, Rory, yeah.
You just hope that they're onto him. You just hope that the RFU are keeping tabs on him, that they're checking in with him, that they're asking the question, that Munster are building a plan to get him home, because, you know, Johan Van Graan's contract is up at the end of next season. So what's the plan beyond that? Does he continue beyond that? Does he want to stay? If not, who takes over? Like, surely there's a compelling case there for Munster and Ireland and David Nusifora to get Ronan O'Gara home at some stage and to make him an offer that, for all the plans that he has in his head, that he can't refuse, that they can offer him the keys to the kingdom, to give him full control of everything, the job that he's doing at La Rochelle for the next 3 years. You know, you just hope that the people running Irish rugby are not letting these coaches, him and Mike Prendergast, and Jeremy Davidson's doing a great job as well in France, that these coaches are part of the overall conversation, that we're not just looking at what's in Ireland as our succession plan and our future, because it's very hard for Irish coaches to get a go here, and there's a number of Irish coaches who are doing an excellent job abroad.
Mm, fair point. So Sunday then, Rory, who's going to win? What kind of margin do you think?
Leinster in a tight one, I think.
Andy?
I would back Leinster as well. I think they can. I just think they have enough to absorb that physical onslaught from La Rochelle up front. And I think if they have enough in the tank to absorb that physical onslaught, it means they'll be more organised in defence. You look at Sale, that was a 45-21 win by La Rochelle, but Sale looked completely demoralised by the end of the game. And that's because they couldn't deal with that physical onslaught. And so it became a stroll in the park after about an hour, 65 minutes, La Rochelle ran in a couple of ridiculously easy tries for European quarter final, but it was because they had ground down Sale. I think Leinster can withstand that. I think they can maintain their defensive shape. It will make life a lot harder for La Rochelle. And I think the game management, the experience, and that knowledge, intangible knowledge of how to win European tight games is going to stand to Leinster.
Okay. We have that game live, by the way, on Sunday, 3 o'clock, Bernard Jackman alongside Neil Tracy for commentary. Toulouse are the raging hot favourites against Bordeaux in the other semi-final. And we should mention Ulster, because we often neglect them, and I know we do, so let's make a point of talking Ulster. They're in a Challenge Cup semi-final against Leicester. Rory, they were beaten by Connacht 26-24. If I said that the Leinster-Munster game on Saturday wasn't quite what the Rainbow Cup needed, then certainly Friday delivered. It was a brilliant game, ebbed and flowed. Connacht, with a captain's challenge, helping them along. You know, we touched on that last week, that was going to be one of the new laws. That helped them. 26-24, Peter Sullivan with a late try. Just their second win in Belfast since 1960. So really nice afternoon or evening for Connacht. As for Ulster, I mean, I guess the big question against Leicester is how they go up front and how they go in the scrum. And obviously, Kutsia is a big departure figuratively and literally. So, Ulster against Leicester, how are we seeing this?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. Ulster are getting a nice taste of what life will be like at the Premiership on this Challenge Cup run. They're kind of playing a different English team every couple of weeks, and they're quite enjoying it. And I think they've scored more maul tries this season than any team in the Pro 14. Leicester like a maul as well. They beat Connacht up front in that game they had a couple of weeks ago, and this could be quite tight in that way. I think it could be one up front, and not the same way as La Rochelle Leinster, because I don't think Leicester have the same kind of weapons, but they are coached by Steve Borthwick, who's was the Lions line out expert 4 years ago, you know, former England coach, very, very highly regarded for his intellect, particularly around that forward play. But I think when you look at the names on the team sheet, Ulster have a better team than Leicester. And if they can negate that kind of forwards advantage that Leicester want to have, this is a Leicester team at a very early stage of its development, whereas Ulster are 3 years into the Dan McFarland period of time that he's going to be in charge. Leinster are not in this tournament, so it's a free hit, you know, it's a free run without having to come up against those familiar blue jerseys. And they've welcomed Ian Henderson and Will Addison back since the quarterfinals, so they're stronger than they were then. So this is a real opportunity for them. I know it's at Welford Road, but they should back themselves. They've won there before. They like this competition, I think. They think they're enjoying this run. They've got momentum. They've got a lot of fit Ireland internationals, fit, good players, and they play a nice brand of rugby. And their control on Friday wasn't great against Connacht. They probably should have closed that game out. That's a nice stick for Dan McFarland to beat them early in the week to remind them that they're not, you know, to not get too carried away with themselves. I think they're in a pretty nice place going into this game.
Mm. I mean, Andy, it would transform their season. And it has been a far from ideal season, and COVID restrictions haven't helped. I mean, you play two matches in the Champions Cup, Toulouse and a sucker punch against Gloucester, and suddenly your European season is pretty much over. It's a curtailed Pro 14, and all that had just halted the sense of progression under McFarland. Man, if they go and win a Challenge Cup, then it's a phenomenal season.
Yeah, and they're another one of these teams that they're fitting the mold of being, you know, far more inclined to offload, far more inclined to make line breaks.
Yeah, they score some brilliant tries.
I mean, they're brilliant to watch. They really are at times. They're brilliant to watch, and the quality of their score. You know, they don't get a whole lot of scores. You know, 25 phases, one-yard pick and goes outside, you know, 1 yard from the opposition line. They score stylish tries. Mm. They're really pleasing on the eye. They're good to watch. I think, yes, the season has been disjointed, but, that just comes with the territory in the year that we've all had. That ability to cope with being dealing with a disjointed roster, a disjointed schedule. They're, you know, they've had a lot of those things, but so have other teams. I actually think the winning and losing of this game on the weekend for them will come down to, I think Steve Bortic will have a big say in it. He was the captain when I was in Bath, and he had a 110-page, maybe more, document on line-out play. He would laminate. He had about 80 pages laminated on line-out calls. I would occasionally use his laminated sheets for table mats, which irked him quite a lot. But
posters of yourself.
Still a bit of shepherd's pie on his lovely line-out diagrams. But as line-out nerds go, he's up there in Paul O'Connell land. These people can spend hours on end dissecting line-outs.
The Ulster line-out wasn't great, actually, on Friday. Sorry, brief interruption.
Yeah. I think it's a real threat for Ulster in terms of, you get a team that can shut down your line-out. You got a character like Borthwick who will... Obviously, he's the head coach. He's a bit more to think about now in terms of his overall role, but I can guarantee you he's thinking a lot about their lineout, and he's thinking about how he can unpick it. He'll go after Henderson's ability to read situations, how well they can get people up in the air, how quickly they can get people up in the air. Would they have a go at Herring, see if they can get after him on the throw and see if they can spook that Ulster line-out. And that destabilises the team very quickly or disarms them. So I do think that would be an interesting component part or a big component of that game on the weekend. But it would be great to see Ulster sneak it, given the style with which they play. Yeah.
Mm. Our rugby coverage here on Off the Ball is with thanks to Vodafone, hashtag Team of Us. Everyone in the clock is right against me, so I'm not going to get to touch on the many things I wanted to touch on. Very briefly, George North ruled out of the Lions squad, scored that electric try in Australia back in 2013. Outside centre for Wales recently, he was involved in Ospreys Cardiff. He's ruptured his ACL, so he's out for 6 to 9 months. He said he was heartbroken, as you can well imagine. Joe Launchbury ruled out as well. The squad has been named on May 6th, next Thursday. It's one of those things you feel it's never coming and suddenly here it is. We'll talk about that in due course next week. Won't have time to touch on Eddie Jones helping Beauden Barrett prepare for the next World Cup. Clive Woodward is losing his frickin' mind over this. He cannot believe this is happening. England and Eddie Jones were being made a holy show of. The 2022 Men's Six Nations schedule has been announced. Sometimes, Rory, they shape up nicely, sometimes not so nicely. Wales at home, France away, Italy in the gap week, then England away, then Scotland at home. How does that one grab you?
I think they'll be happy. The 7-day turnarounds for the two kind of two-game windows, so there's no Sunday to Saturday ones, which they hate. Italy in the middle again, which is a bit of a dip in the middle of the tournament, but it gives them a nice chance to reboot if things don't go well, as they did this year, or to generate some momentum into the last two games. So I think Wales at home and France away, I mean, there's no easy games in the Six Nations, but I'm not a manager. I don't need to go into trite sound bites, but it was very tight last year. I think they'll fancy their chances when it comes round. Obviously, a bit of water under the bridge before we get there.
Yeah, it's an eternity away, really. Andy, I know you didn't get a chance to see Ireland's win over Italy at the weekend, so I won't press you, but Rory, several mitigating circumstances here. No games in several months for this team. A third week on the bounce, as GAA teams often show. Amateurs tend to have a bit of a drop-off in performance in that third week. These players are working during the week, some of them on the front line. However, you would have to say, if anyone didn't catch the game, the Italians made 27 handling errors, Ireland made 20 handling errors. There was no flow to this game. It would be patronising to say otherwise that this was just really low on quality, a tough watch.
It was. It was a good result, and third is a creditable finish for this team, and they beat one of their World Cup rivals. They'll be top seeds for that tournament. You know, they'll be certainly favourites to go to the World Cup out of the teams that are in it. But if they want to go to that World Cup and perform, and if they want to achieve the goals that they have, you know, set themselves, they know that their levels of performance will have to be better when they play against the better teams. And the first half against Wales was really, really excellent. Mm. Their second half was sloppy. They were really poor against France. They fixed their defence against Italy. They were really aggressive. They were quite cohesive in that regard. Italy played into their hands a little bit. Italy have a philosophy where, a bit like Japan in the 1990s, where they don't kick. So Ireland just pinned them back in their 22, forced them into errors. Stacey Flood was really excellent at 10, despite the team performance around her. I guess the question is, what happens if Seven gets back? So Sevens comes back. Does she go back on the Sevens circuit? I mean, if she's your 10 for the World Cup, then you kind of have to have her in 10 playing all the time for the team. So there's all sorts of existential issues for the RFU and stuff. But for the team, it was a performance. They got the result they needed. Yeah. They finished in the position that they were targeting.
Yeah.
So they've achieved their goals. But if they're realistic about it, and if they want to achieve in the future, they'll know that performance won't be good enough in the biggest games. And I think that they'll know that themselves.
Yeah, they all pretty much admitted it, said it was scrappy, but result was most important thing. So, we'll talk about that again in due course. There's no clarification on World Cup qualification or when they're facing the Italians down the line, is there?
September is the talk, but it hasn't been confirmed.
Okay. Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent, thanks a million. Andy Dunn, as ever, pleasure. Thanks, fellas.
Thanks, guys.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
The OTB Podcast Network.